Call the meeting to order.
It's all in. Yep.
We have a quorum, and I'm going to start off. We're not a parliamentarian, but just to make sure we do it right, I'm going to move that House File 5 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Tax Committee. And with that, we're going to start with amendments, and I have to be someplace else at 11:30, so the sooner we can get done, the better. I'd appreciate it. So why don't we start? And I'm going to start with House File 0005A179, and this is my amendment.
Which number?
So I will move the A-179 amendment, which simply says that membership on the exchange board must include representation from somebody outside the 7-county metro area. And the reason for that is that we have a system in the Twin Cities, and actually Duluth is not much different than the Twin Cities in how the healthcare system works. But that's very different than a big chunk of the rest of our state. And so we ought to have somebody on the board that understands that most of greater Minnesota is not identical to the Twin Cities in terms of healthcare reform. So that's the purpose of this amendment. And is there any discussion of that? Representative Atkins, do you have a comment?
I'm sorry, I was getting...
Okay.
Somebody was whispering in my ear.
This is having at least one non-metro person on the board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support that.
Okay, any discussion? Don't see any. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So that the A-179 amendment is adopted. And where are we going now? Okay, the A-176, which I believe is Jim Abler. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is an amendment that will make the bill a lot better. It's just improved so much with some of the good help we've taken. Just before I forget, Mr. Chair, for you, I'd like to request a roll call on this. Oh, they can move the A-176. I'm sorry.
So there will be a roll call, and Representative Abler, if you would describe your amendment.
Yeah, thank you. You recall, this is about active purchaser. And, you know, some terms and slogans make a lot of sense. But if you dig behind the idea behind something's trying to accomplish, I think then we can actually address the true merits of it in a way that gets everybody to where they want to get to. What we want to have are really good plans for the best price that actually do the point of that enough companies can offer, so there is some true competition and some true choice. Maryland has come up with this idea. You recall yesterday we attempted just to abolish the whole idea because, remember, the board already has the authority to establish some even more strict criteria than the Commerce and the federal law require. And so it's still my view that if a company would come into Minnesota and achieve the Commerce standards, the federal standards, and then the new standards the board has, whether they be loss ratios or whatever, that then they could sell. And I think that will help even some of our smaller Minnesota companies to accommodate that. This is, maybe a compromise or maybe at least getting off to a good start. And this just says for the 2 years, the first 2 years of operation, which starts next year, and they have to be turning these plans in by May, that the board would not have the power to select health carriers. But they still could establish their criteria, and any group that would achieve that standard then would be allowed to be selling. So that's the essence of the amendment, Mr. Chair. And I'll stand for questions.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I would oppose, while I respect the concern that Representative Abler has raised, and I understand the desire for certainty when you're putting together plans, this would completely do away with the active selector possibility for the, and we've talked about it at length in terms of why making, you know, it's kind of like applying to a college. You get a whole bunch of good applicants, and you get to weed it down to the very, very best. And I think that's the hope of the active selector approach. This would eliminate that possibility for the first couple of years. For that reason, I would oppose that, though I do understand the desire for certainty and why plans would be obviously intrigued and desirous of that.
Representative Atkins, I don't see anybody here from the exchange. I have received a million emails talking about the board negotiating with the health plans as part of the active purchasing or active selector, as you would say. Can they negotiate with the plans? My view of the federal law is that they cannot negotiate. They can set standards, and they could select, but they cannot negotiate. Is that true or not true?
Mr. Chairman, it is not true. They cannot negotiate. I take full responsibility for that. At an earlier committee, as I was trying to describe, I used the term negotiate. Lots of folks locked on to that term. The better description is this active selector, where you have lots of applications that come in, and then the board has the opportunity to pick among the ones that are the very best, as opposed to going back and negotiating with them over what's, and specifically, they cannot, by law, negotiate with them over price. I appreciate the opportunity to clarify that, because it's not a negotiation.
Thank you. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins. I understand your hesitation yet, but I'm going to support Representative Abler's motion, and I'm doing it for several reasons, many of which we talked about the other day. I am concerned with the bill as it stands now. I think this will open up the window for a two-year period of time for all comers that meet the high standards that I hope the board and your bill will select, and I think that's a very positive. The one part that's missing and that I hope you'll continue to work on as you move ahead is this portion of the bill that says that the board has the power to select carriers. And if this is only for 2 years and the board is going to take a more active role after 2 years, I think some of this language is going to need to be put back in if you choose to go this route at the end of the day. So I'm going to support it right now, but I think if we put this in there, it still leaves holes that you're going to need to fill, and I am concerned about that. But I think all comers is the way to go. I personally think for the long run, but certainly for the first 2 years, so we can get this off the ground with as many qualified plans as possible. So, with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to see if anyone else wants to comment, or we can vote.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins. As I understand this, as it's written in the bill, the companies that are applying can be screened out, even though they meet the criteria, they might not be selected. But at the same time, we've got outside groups coming in, national groups that come in, and they might not meet the criteria. And we have no way of preventing them from coming in. So I think that this might be, because we're, you know, for the first couple of years, we're going to be feeling our way. I think that the amendment that the Representative Abler has seems to me to be good. If you'd care to comment.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newton, I think you may be reading into the authority of having, there's a couple national plans that will be allowed in, but the hope and my understanding is that they will still need to meet criteria in order to be allowed in to sell in the exchange. I also am a little concerned. We're doing our best at this point to try to figure out something that would provide a little bit more certainty to the plans as far as if they apply and they're and they meet certain standards they would be allowed in, and yet try to maintain the selector option as well. This goes a little beyond where I'd like it to go at this point. I will assure you, and we've been working now for quite some time in terms of trying to find a place that threads that needle of working for the plans and then working for other members and for other stakeholders that care about this. This isn't quite there, and for that reason I'd suggest to you that I'd prefer that it not go on, but I'm taking it very seriously, and I've talked with Representative Abler and others about trying to figure out something that hits that sweet spot.
Thank you. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I think the idea that because we will be feeling our way for a while, and that's true, Representative Newton, we certainly, this is a very new venture. Representative Newton is who I'm kind of talking to here.
Oh,
but, you know, it's certainly true that we're going to be feeling our way for a while. This is a very new thing. It's across the country. The whole ACA is a very new thing. And as I've said before, it's going to be something that we're going to have to modify and adjust as we go along. But I don't know why we would, on the front end, cut off the power of the board to select plans as a way to get started. It seems to me that the board is going to be very interested in making this thing work. The board knows that it has to work, that it has to get, that plans have to be offered in the exchange, that it can't set criteria that will make it impossible for plans to participate. It's going to want to make this work because, and so I think this is really, I really strongly object to this kind of an amendment because what we have here is a whole lot of public money that's been spent and that will be spent to get this enterprise off the ground. And I don't think that we're doing that to build a nice, fancy website for all comers to just sell their wares to a bunch of new, as I've said this before, to a bunch of new customers, who many of whom will be subsidized. I think it's incumbent on us to try as best we can to make sure that for the consumer, that this rolls out in the strongest possible way. And it's the rollout I'm concerned about. Because the board is going to have a quick job and is going to have to work very hard to make this thing work out of the box. And for us to just take away its most important power for the rollout, I think is the wrong thing. As we go along, we may have to make adjustments. But to me, the thing that really matters the most is that when this comes out of the box, that Minnesota consumers have to see that this is really in their interest. And if we right away take away the powers of the board to do what they think they need to do, and I don't know how much selection the board will actually do in the first 2 years, but I don't want to micromanage that. I want to let the board make that decision so that they can try to make this thing roll out in the strongest possible way for Minnesota consumers. And that's why I think this is, you know, certainly would we revisit, can the legislature revisit later on the selector? Of course. We never give up our power to do that. We never really give up our power over this board, ultimately. But to me, this is really, really the long, wrong way to go.
Okay. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to briefly say that my understanding is I think there's some confusion, and I think Representative Atkins clarified that some on the national plans that are allowed in are based on what is offered to federal employees, and I think that actually might have been put in there just to make sure that there was a comprehensive option available to people, and it has to meet the federal standards that are, I mean, we all have, there's federal employees throughout Minnesota who use these products right now. So I don't think it's, you know, I think there's some misunderstanding about who might be coming in under that. It's a pretty limited thing, and they're pretty regulated. But the other thing I think it's important too, and I oppose this amendment because I think April Todd Malnoff, who's not here right now, I thought had the best example of what we might look at as a criteria for selection, and that was the medical loss ratio. And that we might want to say that a company that doesn't spend at least 50% of the money that it collects on premiums on health care. We actually, you know, we have a lot of companies that in Minnesota are doing 90%. You know, and so, I mean, I think it's saying we want companies that are quality and that are offering legitimate, after you pay your premium dollars, you actually have coverage. And so it's that kind of objective criteria that I think we have as a state demonstrated our ability to do well. I was just talking with Bill Haas earlier this morning. He was talking about how in 2003 he and Chair Huntley worked together to change the small group insurance so that more small businesses would actually have better access to a more controlled marketplace for them. And I don't think any small businesses have said putting those rating bans and increase limitations have in any way done anything but increase their opportunity to get affordable coverage. And so I think the board will be, will go slow, but I think it will do it in a way that applies objective criteria across our plans in the interest of consumers. And where, you know, we may have applicants from companies who are not aware of the Minnesota model that has worked well and that has served our plans well. And they may come in with a product that doesn't meet medical loss ratios that are typical in our marketplace. And that's the kind of standard I think that we could have in a selection.
Okay, Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a statement and then a question for the author. I guess one thing that I heard you say, Representative Atkins, that kind of confirm some of my fears is that the role of this board will be to do what they can to pick what is best and essentially be picking winners and losers between the plans and who they want to let in and who they don't want to let in. And I guess my question to that point is, and then I'll just have a brief follow-up, is we have the federal requirements and then we have what Department of Commerce requires, and then there's going to be this rules legislation that kind of outlines the criteria. And so I guess my question is, and I don't think I've given this much thought up until just now with this conversation, but even after this criteria is spelled out and the plans meet all of that criteria, and they align themselves with all those things that are spelled out, is there still subjectivity with the board even if they meet every piece of criteria point on point that is within what I will imagine will become law when that bill passes and we have a new set of criteria for the exchange? If they hit everything point on point, is there still subjectivity within the exchange to say, nope, even though you met all the criteria, we're still going with this plan over you?
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mack, that is a terrific question. I would analogize it to one of my sons. He and his best friend both applied to get into the Carlson School a year ago. And you kind of know what it takes to get into the Carlson School at the U of M. I found out it's actually a lot harder to get into than I thought. So the criteria are very, very high. He and a buddy both applied. My son Tom was fortunate enough to get in. His friend was not. The difference, I wouldn't call those Tom a winner and his friend a loser by any means. They both worked their butts off to try to get in. But there were only a limited number of opportunities to get into the class of what will be 2016. And what it prompted, though, in the couple years that they were both working to get in, was they worked their tails off to try to be as best qualified as they could. Tom was a little bit more qualified, a little bit higher GPA. He had a little bit more involvement and stuff. I suspect that that's what will happen with these. We'll have some really good plans proposed. And they'll work even harder because they know that there's only going to be a limited number that would be accepted. But I wouldn't term them winners and losers. I think it just gets everybody to work harder to try to make a team or be admitted to a college class or whatever the case may be. That's what I would analogize it to.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mack.
Just a follow-up, and I don't know if there's an answer to this question or maybe we can follow up later, but I guess I'm wondering if the folks from the exchange or you, Representative Atkins, see it as eventually the fact that in maybe the rules criteria that it will be spelled out how many slots are available in any contracting year or period, or if that could change year to year. 1 year they'll allow 10 plans in, 1 year they'll allow 8 plans in. And I guess that would be something I would just be interested to know kind of the thoughts on, because where a lot of the concern comes is just the level of subjectivity. We're going to go through a lot of work to put together criteria and rules. And I think that we're in need of taking some of that subjectivity out. I think we hear stuff like the exchange is going to want to work, and you know they're going to want to be objective, but not having accountability in legislation, and for us as legislators, I think is concerning. Of course they're going to want it to work, but that doesn't mean it's going to without some guidelines and things of people coming around the table and spelling that out. And so I guess that's, whether it's in this legislation or the criteria legislation, I think that that's something that we're in desperate need of to make people a bit more comfortable with where this is going.
Mr. Representative Mack, I consider that really constructive advice. I don't have any particular proposal today, but if you use my analogy of the Carlson School, there's apparently about 400 slots in that class, and there's 7,000 or 8,000 students that apply each year. At least, you know, if you know ahead of time that there's 400 slots, if you know it's 10 or 20 and you're one of 7,000, maybe at least, you know, you don't go through all of the application process. Let me talk with the exchange folks about whether it's by rule, by the next bill, or in this bill. I think providing some guidance so that people know what they're applying for would be thoughtful.
Okay, next, Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is actually a really good discussion. And Representative, I think we've had actually a really productive week or whatever it's been of all these discussions, and it's been focused and pointed and I think a good dialogue. I really like my amendment. I brought two handouts that would be productive for this discussion. One is from today's Tribune of all timings. And it's not meant to, if you read the article, it's really interesting. It talks about that rates are going to go up, not because of the exchange, but because of the whole ACA altogether and some of the parts of that. But the part I wanted to call attention to is that various states who support this, who are manned by individuals who have been fans of the ACA / Obamacare thing, are warning about the need to go slow on some of the changes, asking the feds to slow down, which they can't. And so another reason you want to support this amendment is because the market's going to be reeling about these changes, R-E-E-L, about these changes potentially. California is warning about rate and market disruption. Oregon's encouraging slow enactment of new rules, which is also the market rules discussion, just for the benefit of the author and the Department of Commerce. Hopefully they're listening. So I just wanted to put that out there. And then while I'm just talking about articles, I republished here the thing from MMB about the cost of this thing. It's going to cost $332 million between the beginning last year and 2016, a third of $1 billion. And so that's why I talk about the cost of it and value and all that, just so people see the spreadsheet about what that might be. So, and Mr. Chair, just to respond to Representative Loeffler's comments, the whole point, she actually made my point for me. She should be voting yes on this amendment. The board is giving authority to establish criteria, including loss ratios, et cetera. And so this is different than college where one person doesn't get in. This is a Minnesota company that wants to participate, that brings this whole employees along and creates a better market in a place where the market has actually gone south and actually is meant to enhance what the exchange is designed to do. So anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Start out talking about the best interest standard that's in the statute. We talk here like these standards are something that are not contemplated by the ACA, or that they're not authorized even, or that we're going too far, most of the plans that the exchanges that I've seen set up use that best interest standard, and so I'm assuming that does not, we just didn't make that up or apply that, that comes from the federal law, and so that's a standard, and that you can't, how do you comply with that to act in the best interest of the consumer, to have to meet the needs of the consumer, that the plans meet the needs of the consumer without having an active selection. How can you, who's going to apply, who's going to determine those best interests? Because the criteria are the basic certification, those are just basic minimum requirements. But the ACA contemplates that there will be other standards that, and that states have flexibility to determine those standards and apply those standards to determine what is the best interest of the consumer. And you can say that's somewhat subjective, but it is, it's not, it is a standard that oftentimes can be subjective and based, for example, when a judge makes a decision in the best interest, sometimes it's based on that judge's own personal opinions or values. But in this act, we have provisions where that if the board acts in an arbitrary and capricious manner, if it applies those standards, and is not, and that determination made by the board is not in the best interest of the consumers, if you can prove that they're acting arbitrary and capricious, there is a remedy in the act to for that. And so that's my comment.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I urge support of the amendment by Representative Abler. I think it's at least a compromise in the right direction. You know, it's simply an economic health care law fact that the more plans you have available, the greater the chance that you have of reducing the concentration of bad health in just a few plans. And so the fewer plans you have available, the greater the chance or risk of concentrating bad health in a few plans, which is ultimately going to drive the premiums up. So you want to have a multiplicity of plans in order to reduce the risk of concentrating a lot of bad health in just a few plans. And that's the best way to do it, is allow participation. That's just an economic fact, okay, or law. It's kind of like gravity. Second thing is we had testimony from Preferred One that this provision of the board selecting having the power to say yes or no to people who reach the certification level is a discouragement to smaller companies to participate, because they don't want to spend the millions of dollars to get a plan ready to be approved and simply be turned away by the board based on some subjective type of standard or criteria. And so I believe that this is in the best interest of consumers, is to allow a multiplicity of plans into there and thereby give them the best chance of seeing lower reasonable premiums and not concentrating bad health in just a few plans. And it's a false assumption to believe that a group of government people can simply decide what's best for the majority. That's proven time and again not to produce excellence, innovation, and better outcomes. So I just encourage people to seriously think that through and support Representative Abler's amendment.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am intrigued, I guess, by this amendment, Representative Abler, and I'm intrigued because I think that it allows us an opportunity to honor what we've built in Minnesota in terms of our healthcare system, in terms of one of the best and most innovative healthcare systems in the nation. And I do not want to see a situation where our local Minnesota-grown health plans are discouraged to innovate products to participate in the to participate in this particular marketplace because they're nonprofit and might not have the capital to build the number of plans in order to hope that one gets selected to participate in the marketplace. And I think that the fact that this sunsets after 2 years, it gives us a time to deal with all the what-ifs that we continue to talk about with the exchange. We're making a lot of assumptions about how consumers might react to the exchange, how carriers might react to the exchange, how providers might react to the exchange, but we're basing these on a lot of assumptions, and this gives us 2 years to see how this business is going to operate, and then we get to come back and make decisions about how to continue to advocate for consumers. But I truly believe that the plans are going to be incented to build products that consumers are going to want. We know that the criteria that are being established are more robust than what's in the private market currently. And I think that if we set the right standards and we let our Minnesota plans achieve those and let them participate, that they're going to build plans that Minnesotans are going to want, and we're going to be able to keep our Minnesota greatness when it comes to health care. So thank you.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the discussion that's going on, and I think one of the things that we're looking at here is trying to make sure that we've got the best available for our citizens. And I think if I was a new business looking at coming into the market, I'd probably want to come along the line as, well, if they're going to have unlimited plans, I'll try to flood the market with as many plans as I can come up with that are somewhat similar but in similar categories, because the more I've got out there, the greater likelihood I'm going to get people to take my plans, which might give some outside companies who have not been in the state before the opportunity to try to flood the market with their plans that could actually hurt our markets, our businesses, our insurance companies are located here. And I think where it comes around to is I was very intrigued by the discussion that was happening between Representative Mack and Representative Abler earlier, is taking a look at looking at the criteria. If we're meeting certain thresholds, but we've got a large surplus of plans, that gives us the best opportunity to, number one, is have the best plans available for those that are for our citizens here, and probably gives our local companies a little bit more even foothold if we've got a national company or two coming in trying to flood the market with multiple plans, as many as they can get out there. In the Massachusetts plan, they originally came out with hundreds of plans initially when they first started, and eventually it shrunk down. And I'd rather have our exchange have extremely high criteria using something that was being discussed over here. I think that is probably the real true way that we get the win-win, not only for our customers, for our citizens here, but also businesses in the state. And I would encourage more discussion and something come along the lines that Representative Abler and Mack were talking about versus going in this direction here.
Okay, Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to say that if this, I don't know what, you know, whether this amendment will go on, but if it does, I'm planning to reoffer my amendment on all willing providers. Because if we're going to allow all willing sellers to be in the exchange, even for 2 years, I think it's fair to have those plans accept all willing providers of health care. So I just want to let people know that. I've asked staff to get another copy of the amendment, and everybody's familiar with it from yesterday. And so I think that, again, as I said yesterday, sauce for the goose will be sauce for the gander. So I think even during those 2 years, when we have, if we're going to have no selecting by the exchange board and just have to take all comers who meet the minimum certification, that we ought to do the same thing, that they ought to have to do the same thing and contract with all providers of health care who meet minimum standards.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just very briefly, to follow up on what Representative Allen said, I guess wanted to clarify, maybe we can follow up offline, but I think I heard maybe that you were assuming. I don't know if you could point to something that points to best interest that's within the ACA. And I guess I'm not aware of that process that either points that out or allows for an appeal process, or if you feel like the exchange is using arbitrary standards in which to pick and choose winners and losers within this. But I guess I didn't necessarily hear anything concrete there where that's defined. And just, you know, in support of this amendment, I do think, and I appreciate Representative Fisher's comments, that just taking a deeper look, and would be more than happy to speak with Representative Atkins to see if there's some middle ground that we can find on this in terms of taking out the subjectivity, creating objective criteria that plans can be assured that if they meet that point on point, that they've got a fair crack at doing business within the exchange. The active purchaser, the way it is currently a very arbitrary and subjective process right now. And I appreciate the college analogy, but the difference is that that's one individual and has thousands of colleges to choose from across the state if they don't get into one. And to Representative Halverson's point, which I thought was very well made also, was that you know, these are plans that bring their employees, bring a great deal of workforce into these projects and trying to create what is best for the consumers of Minnesota. And I just think we need to remove the subjectivity that we currently have in this bill. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to respond to that and thank you, Representative Mack, for kind of setting it up. I mean, I think people have been throwing around the word arbitrary and capricious, and I don't see anything in here that allows for that. It talks about criteria being applied uniformly across all plans and all carriers. And so it's not you select people for the board and then based on their friendships, they decide who to connect up to. It's going to have to be objective criteria adopted in a public process with notice in the state registrar. And it's not, there's nothing that I can see in this bill, and I would welcome Representative Atkins correcting me if that's not true. I don't see anything in this that allows the selection to be based on anything but uniform criteria applied equally to all comers to the market, and that the criteria will have to be developed in a process that will allow all the carriers to have input into that, and that it should probably be based on the kind of criteria that we always look at in terms of making sure that the products actually deliver some coverage to the people who are insured and that they have access to adequate networks. And I don't think there's anything in here that allows that kind of discretion, but I'd like Representative Atkins to yeah, as the author and who better knows all the words in the bill.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Loeffler. I think I have memorized almost all 1,400 words, but the I would just add to what you noted. There would be an expectation that criteria would be set. That's part of the bill. And then I think what Representative Mack has alluded to is beyond that, there is the active selector element to it. So, and that criteria is not quite so specific as much as it is that it would be in the, we've put in some language to wrap around that issue a little bit in terms of quality and affordability and value and those sorts of things so that the board has some guidance. And then I think Representative Allen alluded to the on page 75, actually, of the Affordable Care Act, it's got to be in the best interest of consumers. So there's kind of those two. There's the factors, and then there's the best interest standard. And specifically, an arbitrary or capricious or for any other reason other than those criteria that have been set out, those that approach would not be allowed. That's expressly excluded. You know, making it on an arbitrary basis or based on friendships or things like that would be inappropriate.
Thank you.
Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we need to vote pretty soon just for time. But I just wanted to react to one thing that was said about Principal Loeffler, and I don't want to rekindle the debate, but if the board gets to decide after people have achieved the second level of, we have the state law, state certification, you have the federal certification, you have the new exchange board certification, and they made all those three thresholds, and you have 10 plans that meet all those 10 and they decide to pick 7, they're going to have to just make a vote and decide in some way that will not be transparent how they picked those, kicked out the 3. So actually she's kind of arguing on behalf of my amendment that we would actually limit ourselves to the strict criteria. If you have strict criteria, everybody who meets the criteria gets in. That's the amendment. So, and so it's a new high bar that we're going after. So with that, I don't want to re-argue it, but Mr. Chair, this has been a great discussion. I don't think I need a roll call, so I'd withdraw my request for a roll call.
Yeah.
Can I prepare?
Representative Atkins, do you have any comments?
No, Mr. Chair. I think it's been thoroughly discussed, and I would still appreciate opposing it for the reasons that I set out in the initial discussion with Representative Abler.
Well, let me give my comments, and then we'll vote. I am torn on this amendment, to be honest. I sort of like it. On the other hand, and my main concern is, if we have the selection, will we stop innovation? And there was a great article in Health Affairs this last month on that.
Yeah, I know you gave it to me, all right.
About value-based decision-making, and I can explain it to the males here that if you explain to a patient about that has prostate cancer, and give them the choices of immediate surgery or delaying if it's a slow-growing tumor. Almost all males pick the delay, and that's much less expensive, and the value is there, so it's called value-based decision-making. And if some insurance company wants to implement that, would that be prevented if they weren't picked, or if they were picked and then they wanted to start this halfway through the year? I don't know. So on the other hand, this is still a work in progress. It's got at least two more committees to go through, plus the vote on the floor, plus a conference committee. And I know that as we go along, things will change. And so right now, I'm going to vote no on this amendment. And with that, since the roll call has been withdrawn, all those in favor of the A-176 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying no.
No. No.
Division been called for. all those in favor, please raise their hands. Got it? All those opposed? The vote is 8-8. We're going to have to recount then.
It's
tied. Okay, both ways it was tied. So one said 8-8 and the other said 9-9.
No,
no
one said
8-8. Oh, okay. So 9-9, so the amendment fails.
9-9, you die.
You want to? Let's do it over again, folks. Yeah. Let's count over again. All those in favor, signify by saying aye, or raise their hand. I got nine there.
What's the committee?
All those opposed.
Now we have to
Now I got ten.
Yeah, we have to.
Okay, so it's 9 in favor, 10 opposed. The amendment is not adopted. Let's go on to the next. What are we going to do next? 119, which is an Atkins amendment, and I would move the 119 amendment. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just searching through my packet. If one of the pages would be kind enough to supply me the 119. This is, we talked earlier, Mr. Chairman, about the data practices that we worked on with Representative Holberg and Chairman Lesh's and Chairman Simon's committee. We have some additional language that continues that, specifically on that subcommittee. Representative Scott raised some additional concerns which were good concerns, very reasonable questions. And we have Mr. Turpin here from the Exchange, who's the Attorney General Counsel and Data Practices Officer. He's made some additional changes in order to try to address Representative Scott's concerns. So if possible, I'd like to just have him briefly describe what's in this amendment, and then I think I suspect it should get good bipartisan support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Come on up. Welcome to the committee, and would you state your name for the tape, please?
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Mike Turpin, and General Counsel for the Exchange. Mr. Chair, representatives, as Representative Atkins alluded, this amendment attempts to further clarify some of the data practices provisions, hopefully providing some more clarity to some of the definitions used in that provision, specifically starting on lines 1.3 through 1.8. There are definitions that identify what an individual is, and also includes a provision that identifies a definition for the term participating. And again, the reason behind this is really to identify and differentiate between individuals who are seeking eligibility determinations or enrollment through the exchange versus individuals who may be agents or brokers or navigators or in-person assisters who have more of a different relationship with the exchange, as opposed to somebody who's providing more of the type of private, individually identifiable data about actually getting an eligibility determination. And additionally, because there could be non-individuals who are seeking to participate with the exchange, including employers who are seeking to participate on behalf of their employees, wanted to include that definition so that there was a differentiation between entities that may be interacting with the exchange as a vendor, for example. Then there are several lines to correct some of the changes within the language to mirror some of the definitions regarding participating. Beginning on line 1.13, there are provisions added to that subdivision to clarify some additional reasons why the exchange would be able to share data. And this would be data, again, on those individuals who are individually participating within the exchange or employers who are participating. And this really makes this section mirror in many ways the current provision of 13.46 in the Data Practices Act that relates to welfare data. Welfare data under 13.46 is generally classified as, on individuals, generally classified as private, but then 13.46 identifies various provisions on which that data could be disclosed to others. And this, in fact, mirrors in many ways what some of those reasons are, including a court order or according to existing state law. Additionally, there's line 1.16 through 1.118, there's an attempt to really tighten the purposes upon which the exchange could actually disclose data, again, collected from one of those individuals or entities participating with the exchange, and it really limits the number of reasons in which that data could be shared to verifying the identity of the individual, determining eligibility, processing premiums, processing enrollment, or investigating fraud related to those individuals, employers, or employees. So it really limits it. Previously, it had talked about carrying out any functions. This limits to a more specific set of purposes. On 1.20 or 1.19 through 1.23, again, there's a mirroring of that going from a broad scope of carrying out the various functions of the exchange to, again, a limited subset of purposes. On lines 1.25, it creates a separate section of data that's really related to those individuals or entities that are participating or that are not participating with the exchange but otherwise have some relationships with the exchange where they may need to provide data about themselves. And a perfect example of this would be an in-person assister or an agent or navigator agent or broker, where because of the exchanges online facing nature, those individuals will need to actually go through identity proofing as well. So they may need to provide some information to say that I, John Smith, who wants to be an assister, actually am John Smith. And so there may need to be some matching that occurs there. And that's usually done through provision of some private data to be able to actually match those names correctly. So this makes clear that again, there's some private or non-public data about those entities, but that may be treated a little bit differently than the type of data with someone who's participating. And in these sections, there's additions on line 2.1 and 2.2 that mirror the above provisions related to those participating individuals. But in lines 2.3 through 2.9, it maintains the language of only to the extent necessary to carry out the functions of the exchange. Because again, this, instead of having the limited purposes, there may be some broader purposes for which the data on those individuals may need to be exchanged. And it's recognizing that given that these individuals and entities may be participating in much more of a more akin to a vendor or someone else who's contracting with a government entity, that there is historically more of a basis for disseminating that data than there is on individuals who are seeking assistance or benefits from a government entity. The final change identifies that it puts a time limitation upon the ability or the requirement that state agencies disclose certain data about individuals who are participating with the exchange. And what this does is it makes clear that as the exchange is getting established, there may be need to access state data sources because federal sources may become unavailable or better sources may be identified at the state level. And so this this identifies and makes clear that those could be accessed. However, it puts a time limitation on that with the recognition that over the course of that first year, those should be able to be clearly identified and clearly delineated, and then any specific data sharing that's necessary could be written explicitly into law so that this broader scope and the flexibility needed in the first year would not be necessary going on. The final change deals with the term purpose codes, and it's simply changing that to role-based access to really be more in line with general terminology that's used in data privacy and security.
Representative Loeffler. Wait a minute. Oh, Abler. Representative Abler.
Thanks. There's a reason I wasn't a lawyer. This is a very important part of the bill, and I wish I understood it better. But Representative Atkins, was this the work group that this is a product of the work group with Mr. Neumeister and that whole group, or is that a different project that's still coming forward?
Mr. Chair, Atkins. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abler, thank you for pointing that out. All of this came out of that same. We took this piece of the bill, sent it off to the Data Practices Subcommittee, at which were Mr. Neumeister, Mr. Gemberling, and others, in addition to Representative Scott, Representative Holberg, Simon, and that group worked up some items. We got about 95% of the way there. Previously, we put that amendment on. Representative Scott still had some additional questions or concerns. We're trying to get to the 98% mark, and my hope is that by the time we get perhaps to Ways and Means or the floor, with Mr. Neumeister and Gemberling and Representative Holberg and others, will be at that 100% certainty mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a really good group of people to work on this. So I suggest we adopt their work.
Okay. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Turpin, my question is about 2.17, where we're deleting the purpose codes, which I had actually noted in the bill and liked, and replacing role-based access. And I would just say that based on our recent experience with the DNR employee and with some people in law enforcement who would have role-based access for legitimate work, I guess I thought the purpose codes was a nice way to have them not be able to have one that says, I was just curious about my neighbor. And so I really think you should rethink this as to whether or not it adequately has the proper trail if someone were to have role-based access but were to abuse that. And so I really think, and I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a law enforcement person, but I think we have just had some situations recently that have arisen that make me think that that might be useful. And if you could just look at that as this continues on, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, any other questions? I don't see anything. So all those in favor of Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief question to follow up on what Representative Abler said. I guess I just had a question on process in terms of I, too, wish that I understood some of this data practice stuff a little bit more clearly. But I'm just wondering, Representative Atkins, I know this was in the possession of the data practice subcommittee, which is kind of who we rely on to really know this stuff in and out. Just wondering, they had an open meeting on it, excuse me, but they didn't have possession of it. And I'm just wondering why this change or this amendment wasn't heard and vetted well in that committee with those folks and voted on there, I guess, on a part of the bill that is supposed to, you know, be, you know, sunshine and transparency. I'm not feeling it particularly in this area, just with it coming up here, wondering why it wasn't vetted in the data practices subcommittee.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins.
Representative Mack. Quite frankly, I've just been following Representative Holberg's advice in terms of how to handle this. It was squarely in committee, got a hearing, and it's my understanding that they have been doing their best to share the outcomes, and that Representative Scott's concerns and others' concerns have been shared and are attempting to be addressed. But part of the, you know, and we're doing it in the sunshine of this committee. I suspect if we've mucked anything up or need additional fixes, we'll get an opportunity in further committees as well. But there's certainly every effort to try to keep it as open of a process as we possibly can.
Okay, and Mr. Chair.
And
so just so this is, and I'll follow up because I too rely on Representative Holberg when it comes to data practices issues. A lot of this has come out of the conversation and concerns, as I think I understood both you and the testifier, came out of the concerns from that data practices informal hearing or whatever it is, and this is the product of those concerns. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mack, that's absolutely correct. That's the effort and the goal and how we continue to hope to proceed if there's any other suggestions that they have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins, my understanding, maybe I'm wrong, that the exchange will not get any personal medical records. They might get records that say somebody was insured, but they would not get the medical records.
And Mr. Chair, layman's terms, that's my understanding as well, is that since there's no way to deny folks or anything like that, we don't need to know what their medical data is anymore when they apply. So there's nothing that they've got to turn over as far as their personal medical records.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was right along the same area. One of the concerns of citizens out there is that government bureaucrats will be accessing their electronic medical records, because we're putting all medical records, you know, onto can be accessed now electronically. I know the hospitals are doing all that, and so you're assured that no government bureaucrat is going to have access to either state or federal to individuals' personal medical records. If I understood your answer correctly.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunhagen, we don't need their personal records. We don't want their personal medical records, and there is no good reason why we would have them or use them under the way that the ACA now works. There's just, you can't deny folks based on prior or pre-existing conditions at all. So.
Okay, thank you. And there's no other questions, so I would renew my motion that A-119 be approved. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So the A-119 is adopted. And next we have the A-163 from yesterday's file, and that is mine. So I would move the A-163 amendments. And what this does is say that the withhold the current bill, which is up to 3.5%, this says that ties it into what the current taxes are for MSHA, and it says in the first year it cannot exceed more than 25% of the funds collected for MSHA. That's what 62E11 is. And by the way, I think most of you know that we're going to start to phase out MSHA. It probably won't go away in the first year, but it would be phased out. And you should also know that the people in this market are primarily going to be in the small business market or the individual market, and that's the group currently that pays for MSHA. The big plans and the self-insured don't pay for MSHA. So this ties it first year 25% of what MSHA is using right now, actually back in the calendar year 2012. In the second year, it says it can't be more than 50% of what we subtract for MSHA, and in the third year, it can't exceed 100% of what we have for MSHA. So basically what this does is tie what we're going to spend for the administration of the exchange to what we're currently paying for MSHA with some reductions in it. Representative Atkins.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the amendment. I think a good tie-in with the fact, you know, obviously we're going to save, or businesses are going to save some money on what's paid out to MCHA, and tying it to where these funds are going. I do not anticipate that we will exceed the figures that are set out, but I think it's fine to have restraints on what the exchange is allowed to expend as it moves forward. So I support the amendment.
Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was eager to see this amendment. I think you're on the right track, and I'll be supporting it, but I have two questions. So this service to actually just have a limit on how much can be collected. Is that kind of the point?
It is the limit on how much the exchange can have as a withhold on the premiums.
Right. And the second question, Mr. Chair. Is it still in the bill that they're going to start collecting money in 2014, or has that been removed somewhere else?
It's still in the bill that they're going to start in 2014, and that's to build up a reserve.
Right.
And that's questionable in my mind at how much they need in the reserve. And Representative Atkins, at 25% is about $60 million, if I remember right.
Yes, sure. Is there a reason we're not? So I didn't remember about the 2014. Is there a reason that we're not limiting 2014 as well, just to be complete, or is that just an oversight?
I believe he is.
The exchange bill, the people that are proposing this, and the governor want that withhold in the first year to build up the reserve.
Right. I'm just curious why the cap doesn't apply in the first year as well. So it's just something to think about.
Mr. Chair, I think it does. Unless I'm misreading it, I think it says in that first paragraph it's prior to January 1, 2015.
Mind.
So that'll be fine. Just to prove that I am reading the amendment, I'm very proud of myself.
Okay. Any other discussion on the A-163? I don't see anything. So all those in favor of A-163 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
So the A-163 is adopted, and what do we got next? A-157, which was, I think, from yesterday, and that is Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is intended to, it's really a clarifying amendment. I think we use that term. I'm not sure what that means, but it the language, we're either going to have an active select, we call it active purchaser, now we're calling it active selector, but right now that's intact. That's how this act is intended to operate, that it's going to have, that the board is going to have an active role in selecting plans, and that there are certain standards in here, and that it will apply those standards to determine that its selection will be based on those standards, and that those that are selected will be in the best interest of the consumer. So this amendment is intended to make that express. I think the normally, I think as an attorney, we would like we like ambiguity, but I don't think it's helpful. It's going to be helpful here, and this is going to be complicated enough to administer. So we want to make it clear that it doesn't expressly state that the board has the power to determine the requirement standards and criteria for selection. So it includes those standards, but it doesn't expressly state that the board has the power to determine those standards and requirements. So this puts that language in there, makes that express, and that's consistent with the intent, with the author's intent. And so far, the active purchaser has not been eliminated in the committee so far. I mean, we still have about 5 more amendments, but so far it is intact. So this clarifies that is what is intended by the statute. And then there's a amendment in one the powers. There is a section on powers in the act, and this amends line 6, which which states that the board has the power to take any other actions reasonably required to implement and administer its responsibilities. And so that's good, but it's not if we want this to be effective, we want the board to have the flexibility, then those the powers here should be broader so that the board can so that it has the power to act and implement and administer this act in, but it would have to be consistent with the provisions of the act and have to be consistent with federal law.
Okay, we're having copies. Some of you don't have copies. I apparently do, and but they should be here shortly. And Representative Atkins, if you want to give us your opinion of this amendment.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I've read the amendment. I don't think it is out of tune with anything that's been said. It seems to simply clarify or further clarify what we've already described. I'm fine with the amendment, and I ask members to support it.
Is there any, if you would like to wait, we can delay this and come back in a few minutes. Does anybody need a copy?
I could use my own copy.
Well, Representative Mack. And, okay, so everybody has a copy. I'll give you a minute to read it. But it was, I think, well described by Representative Allen. Representative Allen has comment.
I'd make one additional comment regarding the powers. And this is not intended to expand the powers. It's intended to allow the board to act consistent with federal law. I don't think we want this board to be limited, this powers to be limited to enumerated powers. It could be as written, could be construed that way. So adding this language here will make it clear that the board has broad power to act in accordance with to take all steps reasonably necessary, all actions reasonably necessary to comply with federal law and this act, and in addition to those powers that are enumerated in the act.
Representative Abler.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the effort. I think it's either technical or it restrains the board a bit so they can be less cavalier in their choices. And so I think it's, if I understand what it's trying to do, so I think the active purchaser is still a problem, but if you have to have it, you want it to be fair. So that's an effort. I take it in the spirit of offering. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of questions. I guess what, and I know this word is used other places in the bill, and it's been puzzling to me. How do we define reasonably necessary? And I don't know if that's Representative Atkins or what, if you're just staying in line with the other language used in the bill, Representative Allen, but I guess the term reasonably necessary, does that have boundaries? How is that applied?
Representative Allen.
Mr. Chair, it's a standard that has a common meaning. I mean, I don't think it's a word that we're pretty familiar with as when interpreting. I don't know how you explain that. It is a standard that it is objective. So that it falls more into that it has to be reasonable. It cannot be based on some arbitrary criteria, or it has to be whatever is reasonably necessary to implement. So it's a standard, but I think Representative Atkins may be able to explain that better than I can.
Ms. Chair, and I would perhaps nonpartisan counsel might be best to speak to it to assure Representative Mack of all of the potential terms that could be used. This would be the one that I would opt for because it has been so widely discussed in common law. There's a whole body of law that has used the term and applied the term reasonably necessary. So it would actually provide greater guidance rather than, you know, we sometimes pull other words out that we think sound good. And in any other world probably would be just fine. But in legal interpretation, a term like reasonably necessary is one that would be probably preferred above all others.
Representative Abler.
Thanks. Just I know we're time here, but just I'm going to support this today. I think it moves this part in a better direction. Members of the audience who care about this a lot really don't know what it does. So in the just the spirit this is being offered, and maybe Representative Atkins could keep, you know, if there's some detail this pops out about this, I know he'll work with the people that are concerned. So I'm prepared to vote, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Mack.
Just a follow-up, I guess, just the reasonably necessary, in that the fact that there's a common that's used in common law is helpful. I don't have a lawyer background, so that's helpful to know. But as I understand it, I've been told this from where this has been talked about in other committees, and correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Atkins, but that there's also a body of law that refers to this and its definition, and that it has an allowance for vagueness or a void for vagueness when this term is used. And I don't know if that's what I've heard, and wondering if that's the case. And so kind of opens up the can of worms again, that it allows for discretionary use of that among the people of the board. And I guess to Representative Allen, is it your intent, I see on 1.8 where it says the board shall consistently and uniformly apply these requirements, and we talked about this earlier, but I'm just wondering in terms of do you support what we talked about earlier in trying to do this, the fact that if we have this piece of legislation that spells out the criteria and the rules very succinctly, that if a plan meets that very high standard of criteria that's passed in legislation, that then those plans should objectively be let into the exchange? And are you aiming to take out some of that subjectivity that we discussed earlier? Is that what you're trying to get at with this amendment?
Representative Allen.
Thank you for the question, Representative Mack. I would say the answer is technically no. I don't agree with that statement. This act doesn't create a cause of action that I'm aware of, that if you're a right of a health plan to be included, but it does say that I believe it's how it operates is that if the plan meets those standards and it can show that the board acted in an arbitrary or capricious manner, then it could challenge that exclusion, and that it would have a strong basis to do that in this act. So that would be my answer.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, you know, to me, when I read the amendment, and I appreciate the effort of the author, and but really what you're trying to micromanage human nature, the mind, will, and emotion, and there's really no way to do that. And, you know, it has fine-sounding words, but, you know, how do you measure the decision-making of the people on the board with those fine-sounding words? So it has good intent, but it really, our founding fathers believed the best way to control mind, will, and emotion is to have a private marketplace with a level playing field and let the profit and loss motive providing products to citizens take care of these types of things. Instead, we're trying to write them into law and hoping that we can somehow influence human nature. And it, in the long run, that's a futile attempt to do that.
I would say law is a futile attempt.
I don't want to drag it out.
It's some attempt.
Yeah. What's the amount we're at? Yes, the amount we're at. Yeah. Is any other discussion of the 157 amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Hey, Representative Ayler.
I know what we're going to talk about next. Could this, if it's a good idea now, it might be a good idea when you come back, but I think some people in the audience want to talk about it, and just to be more comfortable with this. You have a choice. You could put it on and talk about it later, or wait till we come back.
Okay. Well, we have how many more amendments do we have?
Seven.
Six or something.
Yeah, so what some of us have different meetings. There's a rules committee meeting, and I have another meeting. I know other people want to be at that one. So what I'm going to do is recess this hearing until 4 o'clock, and hopefully we can finish up relatively quickly at 4 o'clock.
Back here.
And we'll have to let you know where. And I don't think anybody will miss dinner. So with that, we're in recess. I'll call the meeting back to order, and I'm only going to deal with 4 minutes. And the first one is Representative Allens, but she's in another committee right now doing something else, and so I'm going to defer that one till the end. And you all have this packet, and you'll find your the bills that are in there. The first one is A178. And is the author of 178 here?
That would be Mac.
That would be Representative Mac.
Mr. Chair, I don't.
I'm not sure if I have an amendment up in here.
I don't think I posted one under my name.
Okay. Does anybody wish to offer 178? Which
I don't know what.
I have to use the word citizen and search health carrier. Oh, okay, let's delay that one for a while. And next is dinner's starting to look real good. Amendment 182.
That's mine, Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
And actually, we're not doing 181. That's an improved version.
Yeah, I don't think that's
okay.
Well, I was handed out it.
Okay, never mind. So, Mr. Chair, I move the A182 amendment. And, so I moved it. This is it's technical in that it restates current law in the context of what a navigator can and can't do. And I worked with Commerce on this, and I believe the author's book. So, the point of it is just clarifies that a navigator can't actually help with the selection process. It's current law. You have to be a fiduciary to help a person decide which of these choices is the best. The navigator can say, look at all these options. Explain the option. Oh, this one does this one does that, this one does that. But they can't make the selection for them. That's what this says. And it's just moving this language from current law to the navigator section just to remind navigators that they can't do that.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to, I believe that this gets at, and I don't have the statute book with me, Representative Abler, but 60K30 to 60K56 is what guides our, can you give me just a sense of what's captured by that particular section?
Are you kidding me? Mr. Wilkin here, I have no idea what it does. But it's supposed to be technical in terms of what a, here comes a, I'm phoning one of those things. I'm a healthcare guy, I wouldn't deal in 60 anything.
Why don't you pull that chair up behind there, come apart there, or we're tied to the other? There we go.
But Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, it restates current law in a different spot. That's all it does. Thank you. Your friend wants this. I'd like to.
Please give me
your time. Mr. Chairman, Peter Britwoody, Director of Government Affairs for the Department of Commerce, Representative Abler, you took the words right out of my mouth. The statutory reference are to the sections of 60K that govern insurance abusers. I'm good with it.
Okay, so all this basically does is take something that's already in state law about who can be a broker and who can't, and puts it in this section as well. Any discussion of that? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A182 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, the A182 is approved, and now we have the A120. Mm-hmm.
applicants.
Yes.
Representative Atkins. And I will move the A120 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we were putting in place the more appropriate rulemaking process, you recall we originally had a food exemption. Then we went to a 60-day motion, which we think will accommodate. We found out that part of the first portion of it, at least until January 1, 2014, we would be out of compliance with federal certification that we submitted. So we needed to go back. We still will, after January 1, 2014, have the 60-day process that we outlined previously, which is 30 days public comment. Then it would be placed on the register. Would not go into effect until 30 days later. So that would be post January 1 of 2014. Prior to that, we would have it become effective on the date that it's posted. So 30 days of public comments, action by the board, and then the rule would go into place. The purpose we have is simply to comply with the calendar deadline set forth under the federal press to meet, and therefore not end up with a federal exchange. It's only until January 1st, 2014, and then we go with the 60-day model that was outlined. Mr. Turpin, who was here earlier this morning, made that catch and pointed out that we would comply with the timeline if we did it in the fashion that's currently outlined in the bill.
Okay, any discussion of this amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
And I think I understand what the author is saying, and the 30-day thing is sad to lose, but it's still way better than MND just making up stuff. Is that?
It's better. Representative Abler. Not only is it better than that, but it's also better than what the current Senate language provides, where they have a super emergency version, which is 21 days. We think that's too short. We've taken the very maximum amount of time that we can and yet still comply with federal law. And that's this 30-day rule that we set out in this amendment of the A120.
Mr. Chair, happy to approve on the Senate.
Okay, any other discussion? All those in favor of the A120 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A120 is adopted. The only we have left is Representative Allen, and we just sent somebody down to try to get her out of whatever committee she's in. So,
Mr. Chair,
is there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify? Now would be a good time.
Mr. Chair, there was one amendment left of mine. I don't know if we talked about A143. That's that exchange advisory committee. I don't think they were.
Oh, that one. Okay.
I had that as a
Oh, this is mine.
Okay,
is it on? It was in the packet earlier.
Yes, it was. And I took that.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I think the
A143.
And I think actually I want to talk about the 178 too, and then I'm done. Weston Atkins and others. We haven't worked on this much. This is a project for further work, but I wanted to at least broach the issue, and that's what Atkins wants to take it today. I'd like to move to A143, which is a specific enumerated list of people who would populate the Exchange Advisory Committee. The bill says simply that you can create an advisory committee without much specificity. I think when the dust settles, do you have a copy of it? I think when the dust settles, we're going to want to do something like this. This is one suggestion about how you might populate that. And I'm happy to bring it forward in this committee because we're sort of a health committee policy or whatever. Maybe if this gets decided before it leaves the floor, we can agree on who might needs to be the starting out group that we want to include on there. I think it'll be inclusive of people who know things and who represent all kinds of groups. And so maybe if the author could comment, please.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, I applaud the intent, and I think I get the sense of the gist of the direction we're trying to go in terms of inviting and welcoming to advisors and professionals that are in the various fields that would be impacted. I don't support the amendment the way that it's drawn. It's as sort of a supervisory. The confirmation process is a little out of it's got its own staff and executive director or something like that as well. I read it fairly rapidly, but I'm trying to get my head around what the gist of the amendment is, and that's welcoming and inviting additional advice from outside professionals and others here. The piece that it also appeared to lack was a little bit more of the consumer side. But it sends a, I think there was a message of theirs.
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
if it was an Atkins read it hastily, it was written kind of hastily, I admit. And so, not quite as hastily as some amendments on the floor, a little bit. But it's meant to be a product that can be looked at, and we can work on this and come up with some agreement. But I think my point of this amendment is we want to have some universe of people we're going to invite, so some of the people in the room think they're going to be included from all perspectives. And so maybe we can get some. So I'll draw it to the chair, but we can make that a working.
So Representative Abel withdraws the 143. I will ask
143.
And we're going to skip Jim's other one and go right to Representative Allen's amendment, which was the 157, and she renews her motion that the 157 be approved and for the bill. And Representative Allen.
Thank you.
And by the way, members, we discussed this for a little bit of time before we left.
I just make one more comment that talking outside here about so that those had questions, we have time to talk about it a little bit. And then one thing that I didn't point out was that this really sets up parameters and standards. We have standard, the best, we have the standard best interest, and we have some of the standards that are enumerated. And then we have this provision that I inserted that the board shall consistently and uniformly apply these requirements, standards, and criteria, all helpful and helpful requirements. And that really sets up that appeals process. And that means so that if the board does act contrary, arbitrary, there will be a basis to appeal that. So, thank you.
Representative Allen has been called down right now to have her bill heard, so it's to be begun.
Any further discussion of the A120 or the
Mr. Chair, I don't mind if she goes. I think the vote would be just, I plan to vote for it, so I don't think there'll be a contest on it.
Okay,
but I would like to know, Mr. Chair, if I could have the 1 minute testimony from what we have just to
know
what you make about it. And for the record, and Elvis is going to sing it for us.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it for Steve.
Somebody who's going to come up and comment on this, Kate Johansson from the Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. Again, for the record, my name is Kate Johansson. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And I had discussed this amendment earlier today with Representative Allen, and just wanted to express to you all some of the concerns that I had discussed with her earlier. Certainly, and I apologize for having my laptop up. I don't have a hard copy of the amendment with me. We have a few concerns that basically this creates a greater authority for the board to establish criteria, and would just express the preference that it might be better to stipulate the criteria as a purpose or mission of the board in the active purchaser or active selection capacity it currently has in the legislation within the statute itself, rather than just saying that the board should promulgate new criteria of its own volition. So I think that we have some concerns about the amendment. It would just be preferable to stipulate the actual criteria as the product of a legislative discussion in the bill, rather than to delegate that potential legislative duty presented to the board. Certainly, I think the idea of applying the whatever criteria exists consistently and uniformly is an acceptable and laudable goal. So.
Mr. Hansen, I would suggest that you and the chamber continue to work with Representative Allen, and we're going to taxes and ways and means in the House floor, and if you can come up with an agreement that she will, I would encourage her to do that. So.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we certainly.
Okay.
And
anyone
else
is in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say, of course, now that Representative Allen stepped out, she can't speak for herself here, but I just want to say that as I'm reading this, I really don't see it as adding any additional powers to this. So we still have this dispute about active selector or not. But given that we have the active selector in the bill, I see what she's doing here is simply trying to make that a bit more specific and put in, as she's been explaining, a legal standard by which plans can see whether they've been treated in a consistent way. And so I really don't read this, and I've been sitting here kind of putting it into the bill to see how it works, and I really don't see it as doing anything substantive. I really read it as simply, oh, there she is, almost technical, but she's just trying to put some better legal language into the bill so that there's something by which later on somebody can, as she was explaining, under the common law meaning of these words, that they're going to be able to have some standard that could be applied here. So I'm speaking in support of her amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I certainly don't disagree, and I think the intent of having clarity in the law is a good one as an attorney and former appellate attorney in particular. I just would say that if the intent here is to exercise the powers reasonably necessary to implement a specific law, it would be helpful to itemize those within the statute itself so that the board has a clarity with respect to the parameters. Certainly, the active purchaser debate, and this is something I also discussed with Representative Allen earlier, is one that this committee has voted on multiple times, and we're not trying to reopen that. We're just saying that within that existing authority in the legislation, it might be better to stipulate exactly what criteria plans should be shooting for in product development, with the intent, of course, of effectuating the PPACA implementation in Minnesota.
Representative Allen, I would encourage you to, I don't think that's change your amendment, but I think we're well on the way it is right now today. But if between now and Monday, there'll be a hearing of Ways and Means on this bill, and then on Tuesday we'll vote on this bill in Ways and Means. And so if you had some minor changes to this, we could do that in and Representative Liebling.
Oh, thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to clarify, I don't think Ms. Johansson is opposing this amendment. What I hear her saying is just that she'd like to do other things in addition to this. Am I correct on that?
Ms. Johansson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling. Yeah, the chamber would just express concerns, the primary tenet being that this is a board that has significant power that it will exercise in a way that impacts consumers. So the greater clarity we have around what objectives the board is using in determining which plans it's selecting, I think that's a helpful thing, is having just the discussion of what the criteria should be.
Representative Allen.
Thank you for that, because of clarification, because this amendment really doesn't expand, or it's just really sort of making it consistent, the language consistent, applying this standard that the buildings act consistently and uniformly, because we have that, if you look at the bill right above it, for the market rules, with the same language is there, and so this is not creating the active purchaser, so it's already there. We haven't just making sure that it's expressed. So.
Okay, any further questions, Representative Allen?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Allen, just in the wording, the exercise all powers reasonably necessary, what powers, and maybe this is a question for the author, but what powers specifically are you speaking of? that they are able to have reason to implement that you've given this board the authority to do so.
Representative Allen.
Mr. Chair, this is a legal sort of term. I mean, it's general powers, but obviously, you know, as the board or any agency would be constrained by state law, federal law, whatever that the law was. So it's just the powers that are limited to those that are reasonably necessary to implement and administer the requirements of the act. So that the agency has flexibility, has authority to act in a manner that would be in order to implement this bill. So.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Representative Allen. Yeah, I heard Representative Atkins mention that this is a legal jargon that they use often, or once in a while, I guess, that they reasonably necessary, but I'm just trying to find in the bill, at least in Section 6, what powers do they derive from? Where are the powers that they'll be able to implement? And how do they have reason? You know, we have to have reason to implement the power that you're giving them. Maybe Representative Atkins, if you could answer that.
As briefly as possible, it would be all of the powers enumerated in the context of the bill that have, or by federal law. And it might, one suggestion as it gets worked through is may want to think about just only powers reasonably necessary rather than all. I get that all kind of comes with a sense to it that perhaps it is this omnipotent. I think what Representative Allen is trying to strike here, as Representative Abler said earlier, is actually setting out some parameters, some limitations on what powers this board has, saying they only have the powers that are reasonably necessary to carry out the direction that's come through the ACA and through this statute. And of course, that's the power to set up the board. It's the power for the board to make rules and to engage navigators and in-person assisters. I won't go through all of those, but I think that's what's being referenced as the powers of the board.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have anything to add to that.
Representative Dahl.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, would the author of the amendment be amenable to an oral amendment, to be all-encompassing, to change that to Representative Atkins, what do you say?
Only.
Instead of all powers, to just satisfy some of us folks over on this side.
Representative Allen. All will only.
Mr. Chair, to me, that's inconsistent with that. You have enumerated powers, and so you have all these enumerated powers, and then you say that when they're going to only exercise these powers, it's inconsistent to me. But and I don't think it means the same. I think that's what it's intended. It's only to be only those powers. But I think using that it really means confusing because you have enumerated powers. So it's the language. I'm talking about the language and mechanics of it. It's inconsistent, and so it's confusing. And so because it's not consistent with the rest of the language, but I would say that whether we change it to only or all means the same thing. I prefer not to change it because it's not
Mr. Chair, just my general, I'm generally disinclined, as much as it was my suggested word, I generally don't like oral amendments. What I would suggest is what the Chair suggested earlier, which is I think the amendment is well intended. I think it is, Representative Abler said, it sort of captures or limits the scope of the board or the powers of the board. And what I'd suggest is what the Chair said earlier, which is have the amendment go the way it is, and then keep tweaking through the language. We've got two more committee stops, and I think between Representative Allen, Representative McDonald, Abler, and others that may want to participate, they can come to some language that makes sense. But I like oral amendments even less than I like amendments that just sort of pop up in writing. So I think the best thing is to do it in this fashion and go forward.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to beat a dead horse, of course, but as you know, words matter here. Every word, it shall, and when you have words that say all powers, exercise all powers, and I know what it means, basically, but I think as lawmakers, we give the A board the all powers necessary to implement any changes. I think that's important. I think that we need to be mindful of that, and I know the author is to this, but that's all I have to say.
Allen should amend the task force.
Okay. Any other discussion of the A-157 amendment? I don't see any, so all those in favor of the A-157 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The amendment passes. And then I think we go back to Representative Abler's 178.
Mr. Chair, I hold in my hand the last amendment. And I forgot that I wrote this one. This is, I believe, I'd like to move to A-178. I think it's just technical or something happens. To state the obvious again, that a health carrier doesn't have to do this if they don't want to. Do you agree that it's technical or do you okay with it?
So let's, if they have more than 5%, they have to participate in exchange, is that correct?
There's no requirement that they need to participate. We didn't do that amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, this is one that I haven't quite, for now I'm going to oppose it, and I'll tell you why, which is that I haven't quite, as Representative McDonald just said, words matter, and there's one final question I want to chase down before I, because I think it sounds like common sense to me, but the question I have is if the plans that participate, does it limit in some fashion? I wrote it down. The board's ability to guide the manner in which plans participate. Obviously, we're not forcing any citizen to participate, and we agreed to that amendment already, and I think I'm going to do the same thing with respect to the carriers, but my guess is that most of them, or a number of them, are going to opt to do so, and does this constrict in any fashion the, once they're in, does it constrict the board's ability to cause them to participate in a certain fashion? And I just don't want to go down that path and then have to go and backtrack and clarify further in future committees. So that's my reservation. But I'm going to look at it more between now and when we get here on Ways and Means as well. I guess
that's good.
So,
and Mr. Chair, and I tried to bring forward every issue I could think about ever want to bring in this committee.
It's been successful.
Congratulations. Well, I like to do policy work and healthcare work and healthcare side of things. And so this, maybe we need the whole sentence of its own name or something. So I'll look at it now.
Thank you. So that is the, now we're going to vote on the, So now we're on to the final passage of the bill. Is there any discussion of the bill? Representative Alford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I just thought I should, since this is the Health and Human Services Committee, and I want people to an issue that came up yesterday as I was working with the brokers and others on the amendment that I had offered yesterday that was, you know, trying to be just a basic consumer protection amendment that said you can't sell an individual market policy to someone who qualifies for MA without first seeing if they qualify for MA. And at first I didn't quite understand what the issue was. And apparently we have, there was even confusion about whether there's a state or federal law, but there's a requirement that you have 75% participation in a small group so that you're showing you're not discriminating. You know, you don't have a nice Cadillac plan for the executives and then it doesn't go below and you get some advantages in the marketplace. So that was apparently implemented back in 2003 when I called House Research, Tom Pender, who's our best insurance expert. He couldn't remember this. I said, what's this about the 75%? Well, I've done some research since with the help of people in the industry. And what we need to do is we're going to need to put in an amendment that makes it clear that if someone qualifies for medical assistance, it doesn't flummox their ability for a small group prior to cover the rest of the employees. And I think we can work that out. There is an overlap with cost-effective medical assistance that actually pays private insurance premiums, so we have to kind of finesse it a little bit because it's not just the regular MA that we have to worry about. And so I just want to alert people that I'll be working with people who are interested in that. And if you have an interest in that issue, reach out to me.
Representative, just a final appeal.
No, I just think that I'm not voting for a federal exchange by voting against this. I'm voting for no exchange because there's no consequence to not doing the exchange. In addition, I believe this bill is going to have serious consequences to our healthcare system. It's going to hurt small businesses, and it's going to hurt or drive up premium costs and reduce access to healthcare in the long run. And I just think that putting hundreds of millions of billions of dollars into bureaucracy does nothing for the doctor-patient relationship or health care outcomes. I urge a no vote.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of what's so I'll renew my motion that Huntsville 5, the recommendation pass and re-referred to the, as amended, and re-referred to the taxes committee?
Yes, sir.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The bill is recommended to pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I would thank Representative Atkins for... you only have two more committees to go.
Mr. Chairman, I made a special request to go to the Aid Committee in light of the amount of people we're going through and the impact on the timber industry. So,